sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
S&P lower for the week. China shocks markets with a new guideline, both beneficial and negative. And our guest today, Brian Shannon, to talk about technical analysis. He's with alphatrends.net. All this and much more on episode number 409 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, episode number 409. Still having a lot of problems with our audio setup here. Good news, though. You know, I'm a stickler for this, by the way. I'm a little crazy. You may say, hey, sounds okay. But our audio has definitely been on the fritz here. We've changed out all sorts of boards and all sorts of things that we just decided, you know what? We're going to scrap it. We're going to take a whole new rig, a whole new setup, and that will be in place next week. So we're going to have to suffer through some of the muddy sound, as they call it, on this rig, even though we have some good stuff here as a backup. But I can't take it. I know I've been fetching about this for a long time, so forgive me, but I just don't like how it sounds in my ears, and I can't stand when we hear an audio show, radio show, even television, that sounds really crappy. So I like it to be crisp, sound really good. Anyway, we have a lot to talk about because there has been a lot of goings on in the markets. We've seen a lot of earnings come out, some of them good. We saw the banks really bang it pretty well. Goldman Sachs crushed estimates, and that was really good. We saw the stock end flat afterwards. We saw that J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citi, all these came out, and really things look pretty good for the banking area. Question is going to be what happens with the yield curve moving forward and how banks will be able to have a good overall lending and take-in relationship. You know, one of the big things that banks make money on is the lending, of course, and you have to look at, well, how much can they lend out and what are they going to get for that? And how much are they going to give out in terms of deposits? That differential, called the spread, is when banks make money. And when you have a spread that's very tight, and when you have yields at these levels extremely low, artificially, of course, the problem is that banks don't make as much money as they can. They have to look to alternative measures, whether it's going to be deals, bringing companies to market through IPOs and secondaries, or maybe it's even bond offerings and advisement on different deals in terms of restructuring. All these things go into the whole process. Then you have trading and a few other things, of course. But right now, we're seeing that's looking okay. There's been some mixed earnings otherwise that we've seen over the last week or so. And I'm not going to comment too much about these because we're seeing that companies are beating. Growth is slowing. Revenue is clearly slowing. No question about that. But when you look at the overall composite and the valuations of where we are right now as a whole of the S&P 500 compared to what the growth rate is expected to be over the next several quarters and what they turned in recently, as well as what the valuation of the stocks are at this point, you have to scratch your head for a second and say, you know, wait a minute, does this all make sense? And are we going to be able to continue at these levels? Clearly, we know that when we have these very low levels of interest rates, that anything is possible. No question about that. We see that there is a significant amount of liquidity in the markets because 29/30 in parentheses. We will talk about that in a second. Stimulus actions have been put on markets this year. The dollar has been holding up well, but yet sinking recently. We see that oil is coming down a bit, and that's good. Consumer confidence is up. Manufacturing has been slowing. GDP probably going to print sub 2, something like that, for this next quarter or so. And the big question then remains, well, how are we going to see earnings growth moving forward? One of the big things that we have to notice is that there's no question that we have a very active corporate environment for deals, whether it's going to be in the IPO area or new issue. But more importantly, we have a very substantial amount of overall buybacks, dividend increases that are going on, and that has been a lifeline to stock prices and underpinning, if you will, keeping the stock prices very well afloat. And remember, we talked about this, that you know companies have to buy. They don't have a choice. Once they put in those deals, they have to start buying. They may have a time frame of a year, but still, whether the stock market is fairly valued or not doesn't really matter to those that have the mandate to actually go out and buy shares. So we know that this is something that's going on. What else is happening around the world? Well, Friday, there was a pretty big dip in markets. There were a lot of things that came together, probably the realization of some of these earnings matters that we've talked about. But also we saw that overnight, something we talked about on DH Unplugged, I've been tweeting about. You can catch me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz, one word. Just go to @@ Andrew Horowitz, and that's my Twitter handle. Something we've been talking about is that there's some scary things happening in the Chinese markets. Now, the markets in China up, 90% on a year's basis, been really just flying and doing really well on the hopes of stimulus. And we haven't seen that much stimulus really put into the markets. But on Thursday night, after the close, there was some rattling about what was going to happen. And Thursday night is after Friday for them. So their markets are pretty much closed at this point. So what happened is that Friday morning you come in and their markets are closed. This announcement that the Chinese government has now put the kibosh on certain margin trading and umbrella trust, they call it, where all this excess money was used to margin up and to actually buy stocks. And we saw that millions upon millions of new retail accounts had been opened over the last several months on a weekly basis. Each and every week, millions of accounts are being opened up, and we see articles about students and people that don't know anything about investing saying, hey, there's a great way to get rich. And I had some trouble with this. I said, wait a minute. Wow, what are we seeing here? This is something we saw once before, the excessive amount of margin, all-time high level of margin on trading accounts being opened up in the millions. And what happened after that was the Chinese government came in and said, you know what? We're not going to allow some of these excess margins to be utilized to buy stocks because it really can make a very, very difficult market condition. On top of that, they also now are allowing fund managers to sell short to allow them to send their shares out to be shorted, allowing for a new venue or a new stream of stocks that can be bet against for either a hedging or a market decline. Now, with that, what's interesting is that we saw the futures on the various markets in China, the Hang Seng, the Shanghai, Shenzhen, move down about 4% overnight. This is after just a marvelous week in China. But the fact that they did clamp down on this was a major problem. We talked about investing in yin, Y-I-N-N, and yang, Y-A-N-G, as possible beneficiaries of some of this. We actually went to Yang, which is a short, three times short on the Hang Seng index. And that played out very well on Friday, up about 13% to close on Friday. Now, moving forward one day, we see that China did something else. They reduced the reserve requirements on banks, the most they have since the Great Recession back in 2008, which caused their markets to really take off. They're increasing liquidity and stimulus into their markets. Now, I think it was very interesting how just a day before that, they said, you know what? We don't want this excessive stock movement. We don't want to create any bubbles. We don't want to have this incredible amount of margin and leverage being used and the risk-taking that's being used in markets. But by the way, we're increasing our stimulus the next day. Now, markets had been moving up for the last year on the hopes of stimulus because we saw the GDP of China hit about 7%. We saw that their manufacturing is slowing. Their exports have just dropped off a cliff. Terrible number last week on their exports. And all that included, we see that they are trying to do their best at least to talk up stimulus, saying they have more scope, they have plenty of room, there's opportunity, etc. markets reacted very positively to that, into the fact that there may hopefully be some stimulus released soon. And then they put this kibosh on it. And then on the back of that, they released some stimulus. So the question is going to be, you would think that there'll be some uptick in markets due to the stimulus. And with the frenzy that we've seen recently, a pretty substantial amount. But with the fact that margin is going to be curtailed, and that may mandate forced selling into the market at the open, we'll see how things play out Sunday and into Monday. Be a very interesting play. But I thought that that combination was just absolutely fascinating, how they actually limited the impact of their stimulus the day before by saying, hey, we don't want stock markets really moving up like this. So maybe they are trying to stimulate more than just markets here. We'll see. Anyway, let's get to our guest and get on with X. I want to find out more about some of his ideas when it comes to technical analysis. And I have a good amount of questions I want to ask him. And our guest today, Brian Shannon. He's a technical analyst, a trend follower. AlphaTrends.net is his site. He also does a lot of work with Stock Twitch, Yahoo Finance, and his book, Technical Analysis Using Multiple Timeframes. Brian's been a great guest over time on the show, but we haven't had him for a while, so I'm glad to welcome him back. What's happening, buddy?
Hey, good to be back. Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's definitely been a while. Things haven't changed. We still have a lot of trend following going on, I know. We have a lot of things that are, you know, kind of like, you know, it's interesting. You always look at the new stuff that's out there, right? Whether it's an indicator, whether it's a new kind of way of trading. But in the end, it all comes back to the same thing, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I mean, it really comes back down to the basics. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the phrase, only price pays, as you know, Andrew. And it's really, there's a lot of distractions out there. And we always have to keep learning and seeking out that holy grail. But it really comes down to discipline and in your, you know, and how you interact with the market more than looking for the magical system is my belief.
Yeah. So I think your sound is a little bit in and out. If we could kind of try to stay on the mic or something, because maybe I think your sound is adjusting, but it sounds good, just as a point. Anyway, okay. I have a lot of things to talk to you about. In terms of trend, in terms of looking at stocks, do you have any like favorite, I don't know, indicators or any kind of specific things that you look at on a chart that is really important to you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a big fan of using moving averages as a reference point. A lot of people use moving averages, I think incorrectly, looking to buy the pullback to a 50-day moving average, let's say. Whereas I look at it as a reference point to compare price to a constant, that is, and then look to shorter term time frames to see if there's actual evidence the buyers are regaining control. So to answer more specifically, on a daily time frame, I think that you can stay out of a lot of trouble if you trade in the direction of the 50-day moving average. So you don't want to short stocks with a rising 50-day moving average. You don't want to buy stocks that have a declining 50-day moving average. Real basic, simple trend following there on the daily time frame. And the same thing would go true on an intraday time frame using a 5-day moving average. And it's important that I only use a 5-day moving average actually on an intraday chart. So you have to do the little conversion for math. But if you put it on the daily bars or candles, it gets too close. You can't really see what's going on there.
So what you're saying is, just to kind of rephrase this or to state it again, is so, for example, if you're using a 60-minute chart as an example, you'll also overlay a 5-day moving average so you see where the 5-day is. Now, do you do that by a calculation, or do you say, okay, well, 60 minutes times this many 60 minutes is a bar, so I'm going to look at, you know, 5 times 8 bars, so I'm going to use kind of a 40-bar average concept?
Yeah, exactly. So there's 390 minutes in a day of trading, 9:30 to 4 p.m. That's 390 minutes. So you multiply that by 5, and we've got 1,950 minutes that the market's open. So if you want that 5-day moving average, you have to divide whatever the time frame. So let's say you're on a 10-minute time frame. You would divide that by you would divide 1,950 by 10, and you would have a 195 10-minute periods equals your 5-day moving average. So if you were to go, for instance, to a 30-minute time frame, there are 13 of those 30-minute periods each and every day. So 13 times 5, and then we have a 65-period moving average, which equals the 5-day. I also wanted to point out one other thing. You'd mentioned the 60-minute chart, and I think we've discussed this before. I don't remember, but I don't recommend that people use a 60-minute chart, only for the reason that is if you're going to use any indicators or oscillators, that you get a skewed view. In other words, the market is open 6.5 hours a day, and if we're looking at 60-minute candles, we have actually one of those candles is 30 minutes long, and six of them are 60 minutes long. So we're giving equal weight to data that's not equal. So we have six 60-minute bars, and we have one 30-minute bar. So to get around that, what I like to do is use a 65-minute chart.
65 minutes.
Yeah, so then each one of them, there would be six of those candles each day, and that gives us equal periods of time, and it all adds up to 390 minutes that the market is open each day.
You learn something all the time. Yeah, so 65 minutes. Interesting. I'm going to actually try that on a few charts. I don't think I've ever done that before, looked at that particular time frame. What other things, I mean, what about going down to, like, a lot of people that write me like, Andrew, what do you think about using a tick chart? I'm like, well, what would you use that for? I mean, how, you can't trade that fast.
Well, you're pressing your face pretty close up against the glass there and tend to lose perspective. I think that if you're just a super active scalping trader, that's fine, but it's certainly not something anyone wants to start with. I mean, you've really got to master your emotions on a longer term time frame, because the more decisions you make, the more mistakes you're going to open yourself up to, and more likely that emotions are going to creep into your decision making process, and you're going to deviate from your plan. So I'm a big believer. You have to, if you're going to be on those very short term time frames, you should only go there after having a success, a proven track record on longer term time frames. You've got to walk first. You've got to, crawl, walk, jog, then run. And most people want to just get in and run, and that's that tick chart. And
right.
It's dangerous.
I can't even imagine why. Again, it's interesting to see certain things. I mean, I'll look at a tick, but the tick chart is for every. Just to tell everybody what that is, a tick chart is a tick by tick, or else I should say a trade by trade. Every single time a trade goes off, it ticks at different levels. So therefore, you're not seeing anything more than this massive line that goes across. It's not a combination of all the trades for a 5-minute or 10-minute or 30-minute or 65-minute chart. So you get this one bar, if you will, or this one particular level, and that's kind of too fast for me. Now, you talked about the 50-day moving average, which is interesting, and then buying the pullbacks, and it's something that you don't like to do. But one of the things that we know for a fact is that, for better or for worse, the institutional managers out there look at the 50-day moving average as this magical line that they know that other institutional managers are looking at. And what they do is then when something pulls back once or twice to the 50-day, they look at it as, okay, there's the level of support I'm going to start buying. And oftentimes than not, you see that the 50-day average, or right about there, not exactly, but right around that region, becomes something that is a natural support and resistance line. The same thing with the 200-day, the 100-day. They're not magical, but it's what everybody does. And isn't there something to be said about actually following in the institutions?
Absolutely. And here, that's a great point, because the proper way, I believe, to look at the moving average, so let's say, look at Apple over the last 3 weeks. It's just been pegged right on that 50-day moving average. For people that think that there's not a self-fulfilling degree to technical analysis, they're absolutely wrong. Why does it magically seem to find support there? And, the key is, as you alluded to, is understanding the psychology of what's going on at that 50-day moving average. So if the stock has had a big run, it's going to track some shorts, and the shorts will, short the stock on the way down, and it'll approach that 50-day moving average, and they'll say, well, it typically finds support at a rising 50-day moving average. I'm going to start to buy back some of these shorts. Meanwhile, the big institution that might have been selling partial position, they stop selling as it gets to that 50-day moving average. And then you have sideline cash come in at that 50-day moving average, because people have been trained, hey, the 50-day moving average acts as support. So we have less supply and more demand in this area, and it becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, it's not always going to work, and I think that just blindly buying the back to a moving average is misusing it and it, you know, putting a little too much faith in it, but instead to drill down to a shorter term time frame and say, okay, it looks like the buyers are in fact starting to step up here. The stock is finding support, whether it's shorts covering their position or sellers, stop selling their longs and new money coming in or people averaging up in those big institutions, that we want to understand what's going on and then look to a 65-minute chart, a 30-minute chart, a 10-minute chart, meaning each one of those bars or candles is 65 minutes, 30, or 10 minutes worth of data to look for the beginning of a little bit of neutrality in that area where the five-day moving average, which might have been declining, is starting to turn sideways, and use those shorter-term time frames to look for the actual evidence that, one, the buyers are regaining control, and then to plan our trade and anticipate where does it show on that shorter-term time frame that buyers actually, in fact, do have control. And for me, it's the first higher high above a flat to rising five-day moving average. And then I want to set my stop below what I call the most recent and relevant higher low. So it's not a random percentage, but something that's based on actual support that's been found.
Interesting. Now, one of the things that I've been seeing, this has been, a lot of people that look at charts, of course, just to talk about price, because it's much easier to deal with than fundamentals, of course. But one of the things I found was interesting was that I saw some charts recently come out. I don't know, it was somewhere. Nothing major, just somebody throwing up some charts, and they were kind of like drawing a trend line, very simple trend line, one trend line, and saying, oh, look, it broke over the trend line, a long-term trend line for maybe three peaks or three bottoms or whatever it was. And they said it's, ready to do something. And I'm thinking, boy, that's some pretty pathetic technical analysis. Seriously.
You see a lot of pathetic technical analysis out there, unfortunately.
Right.
It's no different than fundamental analysis. I mean, you've got to understand the nuances. You don't simply buy a stock because you think it's undervalued because the PE ratio is 10. That would be, that's nothing Warren Buffett would do. He knows which fundamentals to look at and understands the nuances of the fundamentals. And you have to have that same appreciation and understanding of technical analysis if you're going to use it properly. It's not meant, I don't believe, to be a system, but something that allows us to form our trades and gives us a guideline of how to approach the market and understand the market's the structure of how stocks actually trade and how money moves in and out at various levels, such as the 50-day moving average, so that we can understand the psychology of the participants in the market.
Now, one of the things, talking about fundamentals, one of the things we did is I asked you to provide me a good number of charts so that we can put on the website and we could talk about that on the show. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, check out the show notes for this particular episode, and we'll have those charts on here. The one, let's just dovetail into this, is the discussion of Taser. So Taser, you talk about how, you gave me two charts. You gave me a daily and a monthly. And you said, hey, there's great story fundamentals. The chart, there's a big short position. And you said you want to talk about fundamentals and what you meant about that. So since we're talking about fundamentals, why don't you explain to me, about what you mean about fundamentals and how this all works with Taser?
Right. For me, the way I like to look at fundamentals is I like to read maybe the headlines. And the headlines, I don't really want to hear what the reporter thinks about it. I'm not interested in his opinion. But at the end of the day, in my mind, the fundamentals come down to two questions. Are they selling more stuff? Whatever that stuff is, whether it's laser systems, or I'm sorry, taser systems, not lasers, but things to zap people with.
Well, you could do it with both. One would hurt a lot more, though.
Yeah. So are they selling more stuff, and are they making more money doing that year over year, sequentially, et cetera? And if they are, then to me, that represents a healthy business. Now, whether it's, that's a good thing to know, but it's dangerous to think, well, I can just buy the stock because it has good fundamentals. If it's in a downtrend, you don't want to purchase the stock. But when it's in an uptrend, that gives you that extra confidence maybe to hold a little bit longer because you understand it. And, to dismiss fundamentals is foolish, just as it's foolish to dismiss technicals. But to understand, again, what do other people see in this company? And if they see a company with increased revenues, increased earnings, and news of police behaving badly and new precincts, departments buying the body cameras, which Taser does now, then that's the type of thing that you can say, well, there's a fundamental catalyst here. It makes sense from a fundamental standpoint, and most importantly, the price action is confirming that, and only price pays. It's good to know the fundamentals, but if it starts going down, you've got to know your risk and not get stuck in a position that's losing. We've been in this massive bull market, and we've got another generation maybe of investors who've looked at this market and thought, well, all you have to do is buy a good company on a pullback. Well, the problem with that is that good companies don't always mean good stocks. And when they're going down and they're below declining moving averages, you have to look at it as guilty till proven innocent. There's no reason to step in front of that freight train and think that you're smarter than everyone else who's creating that trend. Instead, let the dust settle, keep it on your watch list, and look for the low risk, high probability entry point.
You know, it's interesting because I'll just take a little bit of an objection to one thing you said, but we probably have an agreement in here anyway. One of the things I talk about a lot is the whole idea of, man, the headlines. You know, looking at those headlines and trying to buy something off headlines, which I know that's not what you're saying, but the concept of headlines I just thought I'd throw out here is, you know, the news media these days is desperate to sell. They're desperate to get those things up. You know, you've seen on all these different websites the five most important charts you need to see. You know,
right.
You know, they kind of grab you in. Right. Or this stock is going to tank or something like that. You know, or this stock is going to be the next Berkshire. You know, whatever it is. So the headlines sometimes I find are very misleading. What I would want to maybe take your comment and adjust it a little bit is what I do. Is in terms of news, what I like to do is first of all find a decent news source, but secondly read the headline, then read the first couple of paragraphs that gives me the information about what really happened, then discount the analyst data and comments as well as any of the reporter information, and then kind of see what else is in there. You follow me? So kind of filter out all the crapola. The headline could be junk. You know, for example, you'll see that, I'm just going to make this up, you know, Taser beat expectations by 3 cents, revenues and earnings. So meanwhile, one of the things I'd like to know is, okay, well, that's great, and that's going to be immediately a bump because somebody's looking at a headline or an algo that's trading headlines, it's good. But is it in a declining earnings situation over time? So in other words, they keep on getting lower and lower and lower earnings, and they're up a little bit from expectations, but they're not, you know, moving to a level that is still a higher level than has been. In other words, to keep on draining. You know, companies, don't forget, companies can beat earnings, but yet have just a pathetic earnings history, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, I think we're on the same page, actually, Andrew, because I don't trade off of headlines.
Right, no, I know.
But I'll look at Taser and go, hey, that's a great chart. What's going on? I'll look at the headlines. And, as I said, what I want to see is year-over-year growth. I want to see sequential growth. So I wanted to see – not that they're beating the estimate, because the estimate, you know, some guy's just guessing. Who knows what he's looking at?
Right.
That's his estimate. That's not – you know, rooted in anything other than his work, and who am I to trust his work? I don't know what he's looking at. Maybe he's lowballing because he's, you know, their company's trying to get the investment banking business for a secondary down the road, so they're kissing a little bit of butt over at Taser by making it sound more bullish than it actually is.
Yep.
But if the price can confirm it, and maybe there's things in there that says raise this guidance and backlog and little things like that, that's about as deep as I get into fundamentals. I won't look at a PE ratio. I won't look at things like that. But you know, as you see on that chart, I do like to look at and it's a technical indicator is short interest. And short interest, some people call it a fundamental, which it's not because it has nothing to do with the business of the company. It's about how people are positioned in the stock. But that, you know, the short position is 13.5 million shares. And the chart I sent you showed that it was 4 million shares back in September.
Mm-hmm.
And the stock is, you know, doubled in that time. So we've got all these short sellers who, you know, the stock is at a 52-week high as we speak right now. Not one of those short sellers is likely to be in a position where they're making money. So that's a potential source of demand. That's all that is you don't just buy stocks with a big short position because they're often, you know, the short sellers are often correct.
But let me interrupt you. I think it's really important to just talk to this to our listeners, for those that really don't follow short interest and the whole idea. This is the amount of shares that are sold against the stock looking for a decline in the value of the stock. And one of the things you look at is if you're first looking, you're just beginning your whole idea of investing, you look at, oh man, look at that stock. It's got all the short interest. That's really bad. A lot of people don't like it, which, okay, that could be. On the other hand, the way you want to look at this as a trader is, hey man, look at all that short interest, and any particular incremental good news story that comes out could have the short traders, the short sellers, covering their positions, which acts as a buy and bring up the stock. It's a catalyst potentially for a move higher. And, you know, sometimes when you see a stock that has a massive short interest, while the long-term play probably would be right, and if that's the case, that there is something really fundamentally wrong with the company, there are those short-term opportunities that you can take, because any kind of move is going to be exacerbated.
Absolutely. It becomes that, you know, source of potential demand.
Yep.
That when it starts to break out and these guys aren't in a winning position, at some point they've got to decide, hey, am I wrong on this position? And the stock has just doubled in 6 months, and they've been fighting this thing the whole way up. How long do they fight it? At what point does prudent risk management come into play? And they say, you know what, enough's enough. I have to cover this position. I'm wrong. My timing was off. And they begin to operate, hopefully, from a position of fear and maybe forced buy-ins by a margin mm-hmm. call. So mm-hmm. someone will say, hey, I've been loaning my shares out in Taser. I want them back.
Yep.
So the brokerage firm has said, you know, says to the short seller, you've got to find another place to borrow these shares, or we're buying you in by the end of the day tomorrow. And it's just a forced buy-in, and it can be brutal, because they're not going to try to help you in your purchase. They're going to go in there sloppy
and whack it.
just buy, buy, buy. And it's such a beautiful thing when you're long those stocks, and you can feel the shorts getting squeezed.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one of the things I think that I found interesting with one of the other charts is Amazon. So, you have that Amazon chart, which is weekly, right?
I started out with a weekly, yes.
Okay. So now you have this Amazon chart, which is weekly. And one of the things that you would notice if you were looking at this from two areas is, okay, the stock has been on, generally speaking, it's been on an uptrend, right? No question. I mean, you can see it lower on the bottom left and higher on the top right. Okay. Yep. But one of the things you notice is, as an investor, hey, wait a minute, look at the volume. It's been tapering off all this time. Now, let me tell you where this particular chart can throw a curveball to you. You tell me what you think about this. The stock back in, what was this, 2009, was about 50, 60 bucks, okay? Well, there's all this volume going in, a lot of volatility, all this volume, and then it was starting to taper off. But meanwhile, the stock is, let's call it round number, 400. Well, the problem is that when you're looking at volume now, less buyers are buying more shares. In other words, they're buying the same amount of money, maybe to trade or to own, and what happens is your volume may taper off here. Now, one of the things you maybe want to look at is a combination of, when you look at volume, it's actually dollars traded, right? Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and is there a chart that shows that? That's actually something I'd be interested in seeing.
Yeah, you could just, well, you could make an indicator. I don't know, what particular trading platform is this?
Well, I've got, that's from RealTick there.
Okay, do you use TradeStation?
I do not.
Okay, well, you know, you could do these kind of things, create an indicator. All you do is multiply the amount of shares traded times the price, and you can get the total value of that, you know, throughout the day. I'm sure there's a way inside of RealTick or wherever you're looking at that there's a way to say, you know, dollars traded.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something there. Point is that this volume may look totally different. You know, this may be an increasing volume over time.
I you're absolutely right. And I mean, if you look at a chart of the S&P 500, the SPY, I mean, it's been diminishing, you know, declining the last 5 years. It's in a downtrend. But
yep.
And that's one of the reasons that I kind of started saying that phrase so aggressively, only price pays, that people will look to that and say, it's up, but it's up on light volume. Well, you know, is the car you just bought going to drive any differently if you made your money on light volume versus heavy volume, or are your losses? Or is your wife going to understand that? Hey, honey, you know, I lost all of our retirement account, but it was on light volume, so you don't get a pass for that. price is the only thing that matters at the end of the day. And when I look at volume, what I really want to look at more than anything is relative to an event. So if you've got a stock in an uptrend, you know, do we have increased earnings, you know, over the last, I'm sorry, increased volume over the last 6 months, let's say, on the days where the stock is advancing versus the days where it's declining. So if the stock breaks resistance, let's say here at, you know, 388 and starts to run, is the volume increasing on the way up and then the lower volume pullbacks as it just undergoes those short-term corrections? So relative to the advance, what is, you know, the recent advance, what's the volume as it, you know, begins to pull back or, yep, or correct through time?
So now your story about, you know, telling your wife, I lost money, but the volume wasn't right and all, it reminds me of
That's
a story.
That's not my story.
Well, no. So here's a quick story that I think can, a little story that goes like this. So the two people, husband and wife, are in Las Vegas. They're gambling at the blackjack table. They split up. They get back together later. The wife and husband get in the elevator to go upstairs to their room. The husband says to the wife, how'd you do? She says, I lost $500. He starts getting crazy. You lost $500. You lost, how are you kidding me? I can't believe you. She says, wait, how much do you lose? I lost $1,000. What do you mean you lost $1,000? Well, she starts screaming at him. He says, wait a minute. Yeah, I lost $1,000, but I know how to gamble. You know? So it's the same.
I'm a professional.
Yeah, I'm a professional gambler. I know what I'm doing. Anyway, so you talked about this whole launching pad. It looks like kind of you could also call it an island or a consolidation path. You know, it's kind of like a weird flag formation.
Yeah.
On the recent, you also showed here a 10, 20, 40, I believe a 30-day moving average. And the reason you do that is called, I call it the ribbon or the rainbow, where you see where they start crossing and consolidating, getting tighter and tighter. And oftentimes, if you look at the chart and go to the website over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, you'll see, notice this ribbon that he put on here. There's a moving average ribbon. I don't know what you call it. I call it a ribbon. And what it looks like when you find those areas that you see a widening out of all of the moving averages, when they start getting wider, follow to when they get thin or to a point of compressing almost down to nothing. And the move from that point is usually pretty explosive.
Yeah, because the stock has spent some time absorbing those prior gains or losses, whatever, you know, the case may be, and all that energy is built up. So if you look at, you know, 2014, Amazon was clearly in a downtrend. It had those lower highs and lower lows and kept finding support near that 275-ish level. And then when it broke that trend line and got back above those moving averages, it just exploded higher. Mm-hmm. And it's been consolidating, you know, since basically the last earnings report. And the thing here is, too, if you look at that weekly chart, you can see that at the beginning of the year, the first 6 weeks or so, as the stock was rallying, the volume increased on that rally. And then it's been holding in a tight range on diminished volume. So that tells me a couple things, that the stock is correcting more through time than a deeper price correction, and that people aren't in a big hurry to get out of this thing the way they were in a hurry to get involved. So it's just building this energy and correcting through time. And the more energy that's built up, the greater the potential move. And now, again, I'm not a fundamental trader, but you have to be aware of things such as, you know, earnings are due out for the stock next week. And, you know, is it going to have a similar reaction as Netflix did today, up 17% right now? And
you know what's interesting about Amazon? I'll tell you something about Amazon. The one thing they finally did right last quarter was that they stopped spending as much money as they were spending in build outs and the various warehouses and all that. I don't know if Bezos is going to continue to adhere to that, or he's going to say, okay, we got the stock back up, everybody's appeased for a little while, going back to the spending. If he goes back to the spending, the levels that we saw and the losses that we saw on this stock, there's going to be a lot of disappointment. I'm just going to share that with you. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if that does happen, there'll be a tremendous amount of, I think there'll be a tremendous amount of disappointment. People will lose a lot of faith in that. Let's switch over to Facebook.
I agree with what you just said on Amazon. The one thing that, you know, gives me a little bit of comfort is that news and surprises tend to follow the direction of the trend, because the market's a discounting mechanism, as we know. It's anticipating what's next, and it appears as though the money is positioned for not getting a disappointment. Look the way Netflix ran up in front of the earnings and then added to those gains, which is truly spectacular.
Yeah, just amazing. All right, let's look at Facebook. So the note that you wrote on this was the prior band of resistance now holding as support looks good for purchase above about $83.94. with a stop near 81.95. Now, this is a dailies chart that we're looking at.
Yep.
You got a big fat red line, and then it turns green, where the stock reached up until that, had one, two, three different peaks and tries to get past resistance, couldn't do it, and then broke down, held a good level of, a little bit of a, right in the center there's a little bit of a head and shoulders, it looks like, doesn't it? Right in the center?
Yes. Yeah, yes, but, I see that.
And then actually you could say that if you drew a line across the bottom of all those ticks all the way at the bottom, it kind of held that, what, 74 and a half level? About 74, mm-hmm. 74 and a half level. And then a little bit more of a sloppier banding when it came to the moving averages here, but you did break. Now, the only thing about Facebook is it did break, and once it broke pretty well, by the way. But what's going on right now? I mean, what are you seeing right now that looks exciting?
Well, the good thing about this chart here is that it represents a good example of prior resistance tends to act as support. And, you know, a lot of people know that, just like they know the 50-day moving average often acts as support. But if they understand why that is more important, why did that prior resistance, why does it now act as support? And, you know, there was a seller or sellers of quantity in that 82 to 82 and a half area. And the market finally absorbed that sell pressure. And you saw that, you know, the stock back in mid-March pulled back to the rising 50-day moving average and just launched right through that prior resistance. So a little bit of a shakeout, and then it went. So if it's going to now hold, the way you look at it is, well, why would it hold? Well, shorts probably got squeezed on that. And as it pulls back to the breakout point, they're saying, well, now's my opportunity to get out break even. I've been shorting at this level of resistance. Now it's back there. The buyers are in control. I'm going to bid for my stock and try to buy it back before my account gets damaged too badly. Sideline cash, look at it and say, hey, here's the pullback. And you might even look at it and say, well, it's right at the rising 20-day moving average. Why is the rising 20-day moving average potentially support? And if you can have a couple of these things come together in the same place, so maybe it's also, you know, from the 77 to 87 move, it was about a 50% retracement. So you've got maybe retracement buyers in there or covering their short. So it's the psychology of what are these various participants doing. And if it can make that higher high, above that little 84-ish level that I was pointing to, and then protect yourself with a stop, well, the path of least resistance is higher here. Trend once established, more likely to continue than reverse. So you say, okay, I'm trading with this trend, but if I'm wrong, my stop initially goes at 81.95-ish, because if it breaks that, it's showing that it's unable to sustain that higher high, and the definition of trend at that point would be broken for that time frame. So it's putting all of this together and trying to understand not just, hey, support or resistance broken tends to act as support. It's, you know, anyone can memorize that, but to understand the psychology behind it, like we talked about with the 50-day moving average, then you can really get a much better understanding of the dynamics of what makes people buy or sell in certain areas.
And all you have to do is think about yourself for a second and the times that you've been trading and you're like, okay, I bought this thing at $10. It went down to $8. And you're like, oh, man, if it gets to 10, I'm out. I'm done. You know, this kind of hurt for a while. And that's, this, you know, multiply that by a few million people. And you can kind of see where that plays out. So what happens is that if it gets back to 10, where you thought the breakout was happening, it didn't, and it reversed on you, all of a sudden that $10 comes, it's resistance. Why is it resistance? Because everybody that was in at those price that looked like that was the price to hit, well, I'm out because now it's resistance again. And what happens is it's just an emotional psychological level that, you know, is being looked at, and it's not just you. Just let you know. And one of the things as a trader that you need to do, or as a short-term investor, I'm not taking long-term here, I'm not saying, you know, those that are just looking at fundamentals, but you need to understand that what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you're doing is probably just a small sample of what everybody else is doing too, right?
Absolutely. And you know, big money trades emotionally at times as well. And what we need to understand is what our personal time frame is, and not get that mixed up with what somebody is saying on Twitter who's looking at their tick chart. But understand that that's noise for you personally. But understand that those people are involved in the markets, and to dismiss technical analysis, or I hear people say, you know, dismissing technical analysis, and I'll hear some traders say, well, I don't ever look at the news. None of the fundamentals matter. I don't even consider that. How can it hurt to know what other people are is motivating other people to take action in the market? To me, it's kind of foolish to be closed-minded to either approach. And if you're an investor, I guarantee you can get better results by just simply looking at a chart and saying, well, does the trend agree with what I'm saying? Or should I wait for a better opportunity to buy the stock where there's not as much risk?
I hear you. Brian Shannon, alphatrends.net, StockTwits, Yahoo Finance, and of course his book. Great book, by the way, because it's, you know what's great about it? It's in color. I know that sounds silly, but it's true.
Color's good.
No, seriously, color's good. And it's big. It's not one of those small books. It's a very large book. I think that I actually gave you some kudos in the book when you wrote it some time ago. Technical analysis using multiple time frames. Excellent book. Pick it up if you can. You can check it out. He's available. The book's available on his site and other places over at alphatrends.net. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks, Andrew.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, I do apologize for some of that audio. I did warn you that we're having some problems with the audio, so let's just deal with that for a moment and just give me a second to get this together. Wait till you hear next week. I'm pretty convinced. I'm putting out myself out there a little bit here, but we got a new rig sitting in a bunch of boxes that the techie's going to put together, and wait till next week. Tell me if you see a difference. By the way, you could tell me, email me over at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com and tell me if you actually how this sounds and all. I know that when we was talking to Brian a second ago, that was a little bit choppy. But anyway, so lots of earnings on the horizon this week. It should be a very good week. This is the big week of earnings. About 100 different companies in the S&P 500, about 100, maybe about 80 are going to be reporting this week. And it should be very interesting to see how it all plays out, how we see if there's going to be a recovery in the markets with the news out of China that I mentioned, that they are going to be pushing up into more stimulus. The talk about what's going on with Greece. Greece supposedly only has until the summer, and earnings and mix it all together, and we'll see what's going to happen there. It's interesting how oil has been pushing back up. We saw that there was a pretty interesting number last week, about a million and a half barrels of inventory build. And that's in the face of, or kind of contrast to what we saw, about 10 million build each and every week. Probably a lot of that is due to the fact that the whole Iran issue is questionably off the table. We also have the fact that many rigs have been cut back. We saw that 50 or 60 different rigs have been shuttered, or at least idled, for some time right now, and that's gonna do something obviously to the overall flow of inventory and the buildup. And we did see that good number, and that's where we saw that oil really did ricochet and dramatically increase last week, one of the best weeks we've seen in some time. And the dollar also helped by coming down. Weak economic numbers in the U.S. are starting to hurt the U.S. dollar, and the fact that the cat's out of the bag already on the euro. So now we have 30, remember I told you 29, now add China 30 different stimulus actions that have happened so far into the year, about not even 4 months into the 2015 calendar, and we've seen 30 separate and very substantial stimulus efforts by central banks around the world. So the incremental market mover of all time are now central banks around the world. No longer are we allowed to see any kind of a slowdown for any period of time. And we have central banks to hopefully figure out how to take this all down to a soft landing that they say they can do, which they've never been able to do in the past. So you wonder why the talk is all about central bank stimulus efforts and bond prices. It's because, you know, they're right in line, right on the front of this whole situation of, you know, killing the currencies, hoping to increase their economies by dropping the currency value, increasing their imports and exports, primarily, and that's just not working, but they keep trying. And we're probably going to see lower bond rates at this point, which I find hard to believe in the face of a stronger U.S. economy compared to much of the world. But, you know, if you think about it, why would you buy a 0.1% bond of something in any town, any country, Europe, when you can buy a 2-3% bond in the U.S. Municipals are doing well. Treasuries are much better in the U.S. than they are around the world in terms of the interest rate that you'll earn. Not to mention the fact that why not buy some stocks?
maybe you'll get a 3% yield on the stocks and a buyback plan, and that's all good for, you know, keeping the stock price up and increasing your earnings. So anyway, we'll talk about more of this discussion. We'll have we have Fausto Puglisi coming up with some trading ideas and how to day trade. I know a lot of you have asked me for that quite often. And we'll also bring some stock tips and some ideas coming up in the next few shows. Don't forget to watch or listen. You can watch also, but listen to DH Unplugged Tuesdays and Wednesdays. If you haven't listened to that show, go on iTunes, go over to dhunplugged.com, and make sure to subscribe for that. You'll really enjoy that. You can email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the handle. And otherwise, I'll see you next week. Thanks for putting up with the sound. I'm right now going to take a sledgehammer and crush this entire rig, and we'll start building the next one for next week. We'll be there. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.